If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
As the economy recovers and there's more reopening and more travel happens, the hotels are not as much distressed as in the past. So you got to find the right motivated situation. If you can't get it at the right price, then of course it's not a deal. You have to make sure the thesis makes sense, but the economics also work.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
With us today is Mike Zlotnick. Mike is known in real estate circles as Big Mike due to his stature, but more importantly, he is known for his personal integrity and for having a keen understanding of the financial aspects of successful real estate investing. Mike has a depth of expert knowledge in the pandemic-created investment opportunities in real estate. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sam, very much for having me.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine. You've done a variety of things in real estate, and I'd love to hear about those. But you know, the same questions I ask everybody who comes on is, where'd you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yeah, I'll try to squeeze a really long journey. So I'm from Russia with love, actually, like James Bond. But I immigrated from the originally from the former Soviet Union in 1989, actually Republic of Moldova. I'm U.S. kind of educated. I went to school here, and I spent almost 15 years in technology world. Then I realized real estate was a lot more fun, a lot more profitable. So I was a very successful technology executive, but I went real estate full-time 2009 after having spent 9 years as a passive investor. So 2000 is my first real estate investment. 2009, I go full-time, become full-time fund manager. And I live in Brooklyn, New York, married to my lovely wife, 4 kids and a cat, the 5th child. And I'm a fund manager. We invest in a broad range of real estate strategies, basically allocators, and we change with the times and the opportunities. So as COVID hit, we've changed some of the investing strategy to reflect some of the opportunities created by COVID. So that's the short version of a long story.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd love to spend some time today on this show, you know, really talking about those opportunities that you see. Being a fund manager, I think I like what you said, is that you are able to adjust your strategy with the times. What does that mean? And then what did you see when COVID came around and the pandemic happened?
Sure. So pretty basic stuff. And obviously we all were, holy shit, pardon me. What just happened? The world came to a halt. Everything is falling apart. And became pretty obvious in that pandemic environment that the hotels are going to suffer. Obviously, retail was going to suffer as well. But retail, depending on whether it's enclosed malls or shopping plazas, it felt like the shopping plazas are going to do much better than the retail malls. People still need to get their haircut and all that stuff. But the hotels became a really interesting opportunity from the point of view that we looked at them. Many of them were completely, empty or very low occupancy. Some of them struggled pre-COVID. So COVID kind of knocked the wind out of them completely. And that we started investing quite a bit into hotel to multifamily conversion. What's really interesting, that opportunity existing pre-COVID. We had one asset in the portfolio that we invested in May of 2019. And that project, that conversion was going really well, regardless, nothing to do with the COVID. It started well before COVID. So the proof of the concept was there, except for it accelerated quite a bit during the pandemic. And then we started buying into a lot of the deals that converted hotels to affordable multifamily. And that seems to be running extremely well, given everything that's going on with the construction materials prices going through the roof. The reconstruction cost is heavy. So if you do ground up, the cost per door, per unit is a whole lot higher versus reconstruction. So if you find good reconstruction opportunities, redevelopment, and you can go in well below reconstruction cost, you suddenly wind up with a phenomenal asset that you can be proud of. It has also the do-good factor that you're creating affordable housing. So affordable housing is welcome in virtually every town and city around the United States. And that's what, one of the hottest opportunities we've seen. It seems to be the trend continues to the degree that the hotels that are struggling to recover, some are recovering or have recovered well, and those are not necessarily good candidates, but there are plenty of those that are still pretty decent conversion opportunities.
What does that look like? Like, is there a certain layout of hotel? Is there a certain brand that works well for this? Or like, how do you even identify a potential candidate for a hotel to multifamily conversion?
And that's a great question. So there are a few flavors of the ice cream. There's a chocolate and there's a vanilla. And there's a similar story here. So you got the extended stay hotels. The extended stay hotels is your chocolate flavor for the sake of the argument. It's easy to convert, right? They're pretty straightforward. They look like mini apartments. And as a result, the conversion doesn't have as much heavy lifting. Of course, you have to go evaluate them, look at the roofs and the site and what other facilities they have. But if they fit into the right residential neighborhood, so examples would be Residence Inn or other extended stay hotels. If they're in a good residential neighborhood, if you can acquire it at a, you know, the right price, it comes down to obviously like anything else in real estate, can you buy them right? But if you can reverse engineer and see what it will look like after you completed the project, what the value it'll have. And then you subtract, well, you typically discount, you multiply by say 75% because you got to make a buck on the project. So you 75% of the future value minus the cost of construction. And that's your acquisition point. Can you get into that price? If you can, and you can comfortably execute the construction, it's a great conversion project. So that was the chocolate flavor of ice cream. Now let's go to vanilla. Vanilla, it's your Ramada Inns, the hotels that look like motels. You've seen them. I mean, the entry point is now from, you know, from the outside, not necessarily inside of a hotel or a high riser. These are studios. Can you reposition them into one bedrooms? You can, but what it seems to be the most common conversion path is you convert them to small studios. You basically have to add a small kitchenette. You don't have to move the walls. You got a studio where people can have privacy, and it's well below an average price for one bedroom. So you're going in into a small space. I don't want to call it micro living, but it's small for sure. It's good for students. You know, what's really funny, when I went to school, I lived in one of these places many, many, many years ago. Why? Because it was right across from campus, and living on campus with a roommate was more expensive than having your own place right across from campus in an old hotel. If you can do that, then it becomes attractive to students, also becomes attractive to anyone who works sometimes two jobs. It's affordable housing. They work hard. They need a place to crash, private. So they have your own shower, your own bathroom, you know, small kitchenettes, and it's a studio. But you have your privacy, and a lot of people go for it. So it comes down to affordability. And those are two flavors of ice cream kind of. There are other flavors of ice cream that you can execute, but those are really obvious, and we see a lot of opportunities in that space.
What makes a good market for, I know you said in a good residential neighborhood, I'm just thinking like, is there a certain, you know, size of MSA that you need to be looking in for this to occur? Is this something that works in tertiary markets? Let me ask you maybe a better question. Is there a place where this doesn't work?
Sure. Again, great question. So I'll give you some examples of the deals we've invested in, and they are in tertiary markets. So we have in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. We have in South Bend, Indiana. We have in Mesa, Arizona, which is a suburb of Phoenix, right? We have New Braunfels, Texas, and Longmont, Colorado. These all are tertiary markets. They're not your big MSA, for sure. So what you wind up with, you have reasonable cost per door, you wind up with attractive product, and you don't have to worry about the big city cost of construction and regulation, right? If you go into big cities, you're dealing with typically with, you know, more difficult regulatory environment. So that's kind of been the bread and butter of these projects. Can you do it in New York City? I'm in New York City. You can, but there's so much supply, oversupplied. Manhattan's oversupplied with apartments through the nose. Not a good candidate for obvious reasons. So it's really depends. I would say tertiary markets where you can do the conversion easily and execute the strategy. Typically, you know, 6 to 12 months, maybe 18 months, be fully done with converted and restabilize. That's kind of the strategy. Yeah, 6 months is really short, but 12 to 18 months is your realistic time frame.
Yeah, no, I mean, that seems to make sense. Well, one of the questions I guess I would have is the return profiles on it. Obviously, every deal is different, but there's an advantage that you're finding in the market. I would assume that you're getting a better return on this type of investment, say, than you might out of multifamily or something else.
Sure. So return profile, I'll give you some examples. So the deal in Winston-Salem, all in, it's 88 doors, just to be, you know, if you're going to ask you what's the size of the hotel, there is no right or wrong. I would say lower end, probably 80 doors all the way to, you know, you can do mid 100, you know, 150, 130, 120. Can you do bigger? Maybe you can. I mean, obviously, you got to have the economy of scale. But the 88 doors all in about $6 million bucks with the after repair value of about $8 million. So you're creating, you know, roughly, you know, 75% of the future value of the project. And if you create a bank leverage, that deal has a bank leverage, essentially hard money leverage. Most of these projects are not bank products. So you got to get some kind of bridge financing.
Right.
Right. So if you do bridge financing at 75% of cost, you wind up with pretty strong return on equity. So that deal equity stack is $1.5 million equity and $4.5 million debt. And then you wind up making $2 million equity upside. So your return on equity, you're more than doubling. Sort of, it's a straightforward story. What's really fascinating is some of these projects, as they're going through the life cycle, what we're discovering is that pro forma $8 million valuation was so conservative that now they're selling well above. I'll give you another example. We were in a deal in Ogden, Utah, conversion of, this was no longer your residence in, or this wasn't your Ramada. It was a kind of a boutique hotel conversion, nice hotel. And what's really fascinating when we went into that project was that was all in $13.5 million with leverage, obviously. And the pro forma was to sell the thing for $18.8 million. And what's really fascinating, the buyers came in and offered over 20, right? When that happens and you have a leverage deal, that deal had an effective IRR of 73%. I mean, it was a home run, right? And it sold in 21 months instead of 5 years. When you see stuff like that, you get very motivated to, you know, invest into projects like that.
Right, right. Now, you guys are strictly on the capital side. Is that right? Or are you also operating these?
No, we are capital allocators. So we're mostly LP or co-GP. So we've invested in both. My job is, as a fund manager, is not to go run the redevelopment. I love the process. It's just hard. And not only hard, you have to be a specialist in a given city. You got to have the contractor connections. You got the labor. You got to have everything in place. So what we do is we invest with specialists who actually execute the strategy, because that is hard lifting. And we basically have investments with the very high quality operators. We don't invest with mom and pops for the reason that this is not trivial. This requires experience, obviously labor, materials connections, and ability to manage the whole project. So mostly LP co-GP, that's what we do.
Right, right. Yeah. And that makes perfect sense. I mean, especially if you guys are geographically diverse as you are, then, you know, you're going to have to find the experts on the ground. I'm curious, you know, you said that there, you know, this was obviously happening before the pandemic, but you feel like this has really accelerated because of the pandemic. Is that right?
Yes.
Like these opportunities have become more available. How much time between when, say, March of last year and when there was enough pain in the market when you guys could then begin starting to buy at a discount?
The first deal we funded last year was June. So June, I mean, we were talking about, we were still in the middle of pandemic, pretty heavy and substantially. So it felt like we're taking a lot of risk at the time because uncertainty was high, but we thought it was a good strategy. So we started writing checks, and then there was another deal in September, and then we had another deal in December, and then we did three more deals this year, and we have two more coming up. So it's taking a little time to get the momentum going, but it's still an opportunity. Although, of course, as the economy recovers and there's more reopening and more travel happens, the hotels are not as much, they're not as in as much distress as in the past. So, you know, you got to find the right motivated situation. If you can't get it at the right price, then of course it's not a deal. You have to make sure the thesis makes sense, but the economics also work.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Man, that's fascinating. I look forward to following your progress as you guys uncover more of those deals and take more of them down. That's fantastic. Let's talk a little bit about what you see the opportunities going forward to be. I know this is kind of a current live, and real estate's always shifting. We're always looking for, you know, where there's a stress in the market and where we can, you know, invest. But where do you think things are going to go, maybe outside of the hotel to multifamily conversion? What other opportunities do you see maybe on the horizons?
Sure. So I have my usual disclaimer. It ain't my first rodeo. I've done this before. People have asked me these forward-looking statements. And the disclaimer, I used to have a crystal ball. It worked really well, but it broke. And I can't find another one for sale. Help me out here. But that aside, there are a few interesting opportunities. So we are sort of in this inflationary environment, in my view, again, and things could change the rest of 2021 and into 2022. Obviously, part of it is politics. It feels like under the Biden administration, there's a lot of will. And again, having a Democratic House and Democratic Senate, the desire is to go spend money, right? I mean, this is, without getting into any politics right now, it's just This is what my observation is. So printing press is printing, a lot of inflationary pressures. So I see obviously good amount of inflation over the next year to 2 years. Once we hit midterm, it feels like something's going to change. And if House shifts to the Republican side, then there's going to be substantial roadblocks into anything that Biden puts out. So as a consequence, it feels like there's good amount of inflation happening for the next year and a half. So what opportunities, your multifamily, if you can find good enough deals, and we are looking for substantial value add, your classic value add multifamily in a good market where there is long-term growth trends. Typically, the cities that see population growth, job growth, again, the price is right, and there's a competent execution strategy that'll continue. Self-storage continues to be a pretty solid sector. Obviously, the local dynamics play all the difference. So we continue to invest in some self-storage projects with the right operators, whether it's the right value add. We invest virtually everything we invest, got to have some kind of value add strategy. It doesn't have to be massive, but there's got to be a value add. We also like some niche plays. Really, a lot of our investing are relationship driven. So I'll give you some interesting examples that we've been investing in. Obviously, more and more states become cannabis friendly, and I'm not supporting the idea nor rejecting it. To me, I'm a real estate guy. I don't take political sides. We've invested in some California projects with the right sponsor, converting permitting land for cultivation. Right? It's a niche opportunity. It's a land improvement play. So we've improved that. We were not funding the growth. We're just funding the land play. So that is an interesting niche. We've done a number of kind of loans on some of the land. Land seems to be, there's a lot of growth in land demand. Something really interesting happening. You've heard of Bill Gates and a number of other billionaires buying a ton of land. I mean, we've been funding loans with guys, again, on the hard money space that buy land and sell it on seller financing to the buyers who want to have their, neck of the woods. Typically, it's in the boonies land, but they'll go buy the lot for $3,000-$5,000. They'll sell it for $18,000-$20,000 on a payment plan. So it's kind of fascinating how this stuff works. It's a specialty game and some finance there. Residential, obviously, is very hot, continues to be very hot. I would watch out for the affordability. As affordability gets worse, you have to be very, very mindful. Some value investing in contrarian plays in markets like New York City sort of feels like it's depressed, and we're not necessarily investing here aggressively, but we're looking to invest in distressed commercial debt. Can we pick up something that is fairly defensive in nature? In other words, the city is a ghost town to a degree. I mean, it's recovering, but can we buy a note secured by a building at a low investment value ratio? So I'm giving you some nuggets. Not necessarily, it's how should I put it? It takes the right operator and it takes the right assets to invest in that. It's not you could just go and just buy, in volume. So we're doing that. Beyond that, some office conversion to multifamily, it's another trend. We did one project last year right next to St. Louis Busch Stadium, St. Louis Cardinals ballpark. We're literally calling the project ballpark. It's a building, the right, behind kind of the where people would hit home runs. it's in the nosebleeds, behind the nosebleeds on that side of the, but you can see the game from that building, from the roof of the building. So an office building conversion to multifamily is an interesting concept. And depending on towns and cities and their own composition of what office buildings are doing, how much recovery there is, that might be an interesting opportunity. So we're very open-minded and opportunistic. If project is right with the right operator, with the right economics, it's worth considering the investment.
Right, man, that's fascinating. You guys have your hands in a variety of sectors. It's got to be a lot of fun to really see all these opportunities come across your desk. What are some high level, we're almost out of time here, but what are some high level things that you use to initially either accept a deal and look at it further or just reject it outright?
This is back to the basics. I like to use, I'm a scholar of Warren Buffett. He is the godfather of value investing. Actually, Benjamin Graham, his teacher was the godfather. I guess he's taken over the godfather role now. So, he really does three things, right? He's all about deals, dollars, and people. That's the whole thing. It's the same thing with us, except for we always start with people. So we'll look at any, we're not going to take a deal straight from the street if we don't know the sponsor. So we spend time, energy to develop relationships with the highly competent sponsors and operators. They are the best of their breed in what they do. And I go to a number of masterminds. Some of the heaviest hitters around the country come to these groups. So we build relationships with these heavy hitters, operators, and we get to know, like, and trust them first. That's the step number one. Once that's established, and sometimes it takes years to develop, many years, then we go look at that deal flow. Literally, we have one, to give you an example, we have one sponsor we've done a number of deals with in Midwest. He's a specialist in multifamily Midwest. So spoke with him earlier today, new deal. We know him. The reason we're looking at the deal, because we know he's a very competent operator. He's strong at the execution. So with guys like that, you could take an imperfect product, but make a perfect execution. And if that happens, your chances of success are better than you take hot deal with so-so sponsor. It's almost like this. Warren Buffett says, I would rather pay a fair price for a good company than a good price for a fair company, right? So the same is true. We pay a fair price for a good product with the right operator. Again, people, opportunities, and then we decide what dollar checks we write. Obviously, it's negotiation. Do the economics make sense?
Right, man, that's awesome. Yeah, that's a very clear answer. I appreciate that. Mike, let's jump here into the final four. The first question is this: what is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Stay focused. So pick your strategy and make it work. If you are going to spread yourself too thin, you're going to try too many shiny objects, you're going to fail. And beware, very aware, there are too many bright and shiny objects. So knowing what you want and staying focused is the key to avoid running all over the place and, you know, being a master of all. And I guess jack of all trades, master of none.
Right. That's great. That's great. When it comes to investing in yourself, what is one thing you're doing to stay on top of your game?
Read. Basically, educate yourself. Whatever you prefer. Books, or I listen to a lot of Audible. I'm a kind of a scholar of different things, but, you know, keep learning. Life is a journey. You just got to keep educating yourself. Never stop.
Love it. Love it. When it comes to investing in the world, what is one way you're making the world a better place?
Well, we're trying to help those who need some help and some guidance, some coaching. So I do some of that. We're also launching a new fund called Tempo Income Fund, and we will dedicate 5% of net profits from running the fund to charitable causes. So we have a selection of kind of good children charities that we're going to focus on.
That's awesome. Mike, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Really easy. You know, I'm a big guy. I'm 6'4 on a heavy side. So I'm known as the Big Mike. People remember that. So just remember BigMikeFund.com, and you can find me. And if you misspell it, you forget the D at the end, and you go to BigMikeFund.com, I promise it's not a kinky site.
BigMikeFund.com. Mike, thanks so much for your time today. I certainly appreciate it.
Thank you, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.